This episode is brought to you by Shopify. Selling a little or a lot, Shopify helps you do your thing, however you. Shopify is a global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage, to the first real life store stage, all the way to the, hey Marge, did we just hit a million orders stage? Shopify is there to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. From their all-in-one e-commerce platform to their in-person POS system, wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout, 36% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. And sell more with less thanks to Shopify Magic, your AI-powered all-star. Running a growing business means getting the insights you need wherever you are. With Shopify's single dashboard, you can manage orders, shipping, and payments from anywhere. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the United States. And Shopify is the global force behind Allbirds, Rothy's, and Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Plus, Shopify's award-winning help is there to support your success every step of the way. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/ifanboy, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/ifanboy now to grow your business no matter what stage you're in. shopify.com/ifanboy.
This is iFanboys Talksplode with Kyle Starks.
One evening as the sun went down and the circus, it was over. The tent came down and a funny old clown said, "The boys, I'm now in clover. I'm headed for a land that's a far away beside the popcorn fountain. I'll see you all this coming fall in the Big Rock Candy Mountain."
I'm here with another episode of Talksplode, made possible by you, the iFanboy patrons. I'm talking to writer, cartoonist, creator Kyle Starks today. You may know him from listening to our show when we talked about his great books, Rock Candy Mountain and Assassination, and there was also Sex Castle, which is a fun name, and his new book, Old Head, which you can check out on Kickstarter. Let's get right to it. Hey, this is Josh Flanagan with iFanboy, and we are here today with Kyle Starks.
That's me. I'm Kyle Starks. I'm happy to be here.
I am glad you're here, too. I'm glad this worked out. We talked a little while ago, and we timed this. We timed this well.
Yeah.
And so we came back around, and let me ask very generally, where do you come from? I started seeing your name, on some comics in the past couple of years. Where'd this all start for you?
I have a half decent origin story, I think. So I'm 42. I'm not a young man.
I've also been 42.
Hey, all right, we're 42 bros. There's some good pun there, but I didn't get it. So I've been professionally making comics for 3 years. I started probably 6 years ago doing anything. So what was that? 40? That was like 36. For the 20 years before, I just drank a lot. But when I was a teenager, I worked at a comic shop. I was raised on comics, and I always loved comics. And I was an art major. I was going to be a painter in college, and that was dumb. So I just started drinking a lot and doing graphic design stuff. But when I started to have my second kid, I was goofing around a little bit, but not really doing anything. I kind of made a list of all the things I wanted to do that I'd never done when I didn't have free time. Because when you have your first kid, you realize there's no more free time. It's all going away. So I figured my second kid, I would just be full dad, like 24 hours a day. And I was like, oh, I've never made a comic. I know there's other things on the list. I didn't do what they were because I really got transfixed on making comics. I never made a comic, a full comic, which in my head was like a 32-page comic. I ended up doing a 180-page web comic called The Legend of Ricky Thunder, which I made in private. And a couple, specifically Comics Alliance, picked it up a long time ago. And people were looking at it. And I was like, oh, people are looking at it. I should do something. I should try to do something with it since people were paying attention. Like, who knew? So I did a Kickstarter, which is relevant because I'm doing my fourth one now. But I did a Kickstarter. I used the money to go to shows to sell my book. I really loved making comics. I tried a bunch when I was younger, and I probably have like some little nothings, but not like 20 pages, you know, not like mm-hmm. a full anything. Always making up dumb characters. I don't remember any of them. It was a long time ago, and like I said, I drink a lot since then. But yeah, so I made a comic. It was great. I made another comic called Sex Castle, which I kickstarted. Matt Fraction found it at Heroes Con, like 4 years ago. And he said, hey, do you want to talk to Image? And I said, absolutely, I do. And, you know, next thing you know, like, it was nominated for an Eisner Award for humor publication. It was optioned by the Russo brothers and the Workaholics. And as soon as that Eisner nomination happened, I got everyone who had a funny book basically came to me. Uh-huh. And I said no to a ton. I did one issue of Invader Zim. I never watched Invader Zim. I didn't love Invader Zim. I really wish they would have asked me to do Rick and Morty, which the editor, like 2 weeks later, was like, hey, the Rick and Morty editor wants to talk to you, which was great because I'm a big fan of the show. Obviously, I've been doing it for 4 years now. Yeah, and so that's it. Like, everything, like, once you get one thing and you don't mess it up and you show up on time, right, like, they let you keep doing it. I think I've been funny for 4 years, if not longer, but I guess the last 3 years professionally funny. Huh. And I'm doing it, and that's it. I know it's funny because, like, I did an interview with Jason Latour for his YouTube show, which was like a long time ago, and he's like, oh, it's all I ever wanted to do. All I ever wanted to do was be a comic creator. And I think that's pretty common. But, you know, I was working at a factory. I had a union job that I thought was going to be my career, and this was a really nice hobby. I never, ever thought, like, this is something that I would do for a living, much less be nominated for multiple awards and work on, you know, the biggest pop culture phenomenon of the last, like, 5 years, probably. It's been wild and unexpected. But mostly, I was having a second kid, and I figured I should do something nice for myself. And like I said, the irony is, you know, I thought I'd never have time to make anything, much less comics. And now it's, like, what I do for a living with 2 kids and 3 dogs and a beautiful wife.
You're living the American comics dream.
I'm living the American comics dream as long as I get to keep making those comics.
So you didn't have like a burning lifelong desire to make comics. It was just like, it'd be cool to do this some way, the way that like, some people are like, I'd like to join a band at some point.
Yeah. I mean, it feels like, that's probably fair. It's like, man, I should just record an album. And then it's like, everyone's like, oh, this album's really good. And I was like, oh, I didn't know. Like, I was just trying to make my whole, you know, I say it all the time, probably to the point of it meaning less and less. But my thing is always to try to make the thing that I want to exist in the world. Mm-hmm. And with comics, it's like, well, there wasn't a wrestling comic. And I knew because I wanted this thing to exist, I would do it. And so, like, that was the first one. It's like, oh, I just love doing it. So it was like, what's next? It's like, I loved 80s action movies. So I did Sex Castle. And this was actually going to be the book. Old Head was going to be the book I did after Sex Castle. Because I love basketball. I really do. And I think America is, you know, it's like there's so many superhero comics and we go, oh, you know, we don't just need to be superhero comics. And I believe in that firmly because I think good story is story. And I'm a big wrestling fan. And, you know, with wrestling, it's always like the solution has to be in the ring. It has to be a fisticuff solution. And I think that's viable for comics, too. It's like, well, you can do a bunch of different fights and have a bunch of different characters do those fights. And it doesn't always have to be fights. Like, there's options. I'm not for sure America agrees per se, but I believe in it. So I'm telling the story. I'm telling Hitman stories, and you know, this isn't a basketball story, but I'm referencing basketball exists and that people do it for a living. But yeah, so this is going to be my second book. It's going to be my second book. But I kind of got the yips because Sex Castle got so much attention, and my wife was like, "You're gonna have 2 books out, and they're gonna be called Sex Castle and Old Head." And I'm like, "Yeah." I'm really setting a standard that I don't want to, where I have to have dumb names for every single book I do. But yeah, so I actually drew 70 pages of this book, the Kickstarter going on right now, Old Head, like 4 years ago, and just backed out of it to do Kill Them All, which is my love letter to 90s action films, because I love John Woo and I love Die Hard. But yeah, it's weird. It's like I recorded an album and people are like, oh, this is good. And I'm like, oh, well, I'll do another one for funsies.
So then, after you recorded that album and you throw it up online, or, you know, like, were you promoting?
No. I only put this first book, Legend of Ricky Thunder, which you can get on my store. I have very few copies left. But I put it online because I think part of being a creative person is figuring out how to trick yourself into. And I say this now, like, because I figured at the time it made sense. You have to figure out the way to trick yourself into doing what you want to do. So, like, if you want to build a motorcycle, you have to figure out how to trick yourself into definitely building a motorcycle. And for me, I'm very, very big on always doing what I say I'll do and punctuality. Mm-hmm. Like if I'm late, I'm crazy. If I say I will do something for someone and I miss it, I just won't. So I said, I'm like, I'm going to post this comic Monday and Wednesdays, every Monday and Wednesday. And sometimes I would draw whatever that panel was or page that like in within 30 seconds. Like I just had to get it done because I had to go to work and I didn't work ahead or who knows what. And I figured like that's the thing is like if I say I'm going to do something. Now that I do it for a living, I very much lean into my blue collar union raisings, which is that you just go to work every day. Like you never call in sick, you never miss a deadline, you just go to work every day. And I get to do something, like I said, that I really love, which makes it easier. But I have like set schedule. I have a set I work from basically like 7 to 3 and then like probably like after dinner till 8 or something like that. But I work 6 to 3 every day, pretty religiously. And I think that keeps like that's what you do for a living. Like I'm not always funny and I'm not always clever, but at least I can answer emails or I can do something. But yeah, I didn't do any promotion or anything. It just kind of happened. It's weird.
No, I remember there was a bit I think in the back of one of the Rock Candy Mountain issues. Maybe it was the first one or the last one where you have a relationship with Chris Schweitzer, and it sounded like he was the one who was trying to say you should put this out there. You should do this thing. Is that part of that too?
You know what? I wish I could remember what that anecdote was now. Schweitzer. So I met Schweitzer because of Ricky Thunder because I had extra copies and he was sort of in the small social circle I had with when I did it. I didn't know anybody. I knew like a handful of people, and we traded some books. And he ended up moving about an hour away from me, and we became we're best friends. I can say that. He's my best friend. And you know, Rock Candy Mountain. I think here's the thing: I don't think a lot of people know Schweitzer. I think they're going to. I think Mars Attacks is brilliant, but Dynamite's terrible at promotion. He's been nominated 3 times for Eisners, but yeah. We're doing more and more adult stuff. So basically, we're trying to find colors for Rock Candy Mountain, and I can't color. I can do it, but it's so remedial. It's just like I know my shortcomings are like I can't color very well. And I'm not great at design stuff. I'm really bad at design stuff. So those are the things I sort of always need help with. And I'm aware of that. So we're trying to find the colors for Rock Candy Mountain. And Schweitzer, in the end, Schweitzer was like, oh, I'll do like a test page so we can show them what you want. Because then like these colors will know. Because I can't vocalize. Like he understood because he's my peer. And we're basically like audio-visual studio mates. Like we're like, you know, instant messenger studio mates.
Right.
Anyway, he ended up coloring. He's like, "Yeah, I'll just do it." and since then, like, Schweitzer's he's not my creative partner, but I go to Schweitzer. Schweitzer knows, he's so good. He's no story. He's such a talented illustrator. His colors are amazing. If you look at Rock Candy Mountain, like if you looked at them all, and I think I really love that book. I wish I'd put out just one book instead of two and blah blah blah. But I think it was nominated for an Eisner, and I think there's a reason why. I think it's really good. But if you look at the first book, like it's really sort of muddy and muted, and that was because I gave him these notes. It's like, oh, I want to feel like you know Depression era, blah blah blah. And you could tell he just forgot about it for the next 7 books. But they look so much better. Like, what am I going to say? And then with Mars Attacks, like the colors on Mars Attacks are like really bright and playful. He just has a different palette. The way he uses color is really interesting to me. But he's a big supporter. This Mars Attacks, I was like, oh, they asked me to do it. I was like, well, if I get an idea, I'll do it. And I told Schweitzer, I think I had this idea. What do you think for Mars Attacks? He's like, oh, yeah, I'll do that. And I'm like, well, they didn't ask you. They asked me. but we ended up doing that book together. And so he colored Rock Candy Mountain. He did all the art and lettering for Mars Attacks. And he's going to color this book, which is great. It's going to look amazing. That's going to look so good. He makes my stuff look so good. Like my art is fine. There's a reason why people are hiring me to write things, you know? Like there's a reason why I get hired to write Mars Attacks, there's a reason why I get hired to write Assassination, and then they're not like also draw it. They're like, we'll get Erica to do it, you know? I get it. I know what my strength is, but Schweitzer makes my art look so good.
If you're listening now and you like, give us the pitch for Old Head, because that's the sort of ongoing Kickstarter, and then I have questions about art and writing and all that stuff.
Yeah. So Old Head's tough. Old Head's my current Kickstarter. It's running until November 2nd. The sort of soft elevator pitch is that it's Space Jam meets Fright Night. It's the bigger story. It's about a an ex-NBA player who was not known for being very good, but being known for being very tough. I always do tough guy characters. It's just my makeup. And his daughter returned home. His mother just passed away. To sort of find out that Dracula lives next door, and his family left a legacy, and he's trying to figure out his own legacy and his own destiny. And then there's a ton of fights and Draculas and lots of decapitations. It's real good. But, you know, it's like the thing is with this book, it's like, well, why am I doing Kickstarter? Because I love Kickstarter, and I'd say it all the time is that the thing about Kickstarter that's so great is that you don't just get a book, you get a book and a bunch of stickers or something, right? Mm-hmm. Like, I'd rather have a book and stickers than go to an LCS and just get a book and that's it. It's just more fun, and we get to connect. Like, it's a community, I think. But Old Head's weird, man. It's not like a weird, weird book, but it's a hard sell because I have two reveals in it. And I wrote this story as an experience about parenthood and legacy and destiny, because those are the things that interest me right now. Also, you know, Draculas are basically sex metaphors or rape metaphors, and I was really interested in that. And also, like, I love basketball, so I get to do some basketball stuff. But if you don't like basketball or Draculas, I think it's a really good book. I think it's fun. It's funny. It's an action romp, which is kind of my thing. But anyway, I made this book. It's like, hey, guys, just trust me. It's going to be good. And realize, like, I might not quite have the name value yet to just be like, hey, trust me, it'll be good. That you still have to be able to sell things. But
that's what I was interested in, is that, you know, you've done a couple of books. I'd say that you could call them culty. I don't think, you know, it's not necessarily like they were like hugely known, but you know, did you gain a bunch of followers from the books that you've done? I'm imagining the Eisners helped a lot.
It keeps going up a lot. I really thought that doing Rick and Morty would be like me doing a run on Spider-Man.
Yeah.
I love Rick and Morty. I'm happy to do it, but it's like, oh, I'm gonna do this book. And like, it's one of the best selling books, especially non big two. It's one of the top sellers every month. But it's like, you know, those people, they no one cares. Like, no one cares. So I don't think that helped me at all.
And well, like, it's that license stuff that they don't even see it feels like sometimes. And even if it's good or sells well or whatever, it's not, it's really interesting about
that. Even though all the big two stuff is just licensed books too.
Yes.
But what's interesting is, like, I have a Patreon. I have a great Patreon. Those dudes are the best. And like, I'll be like, hey, I got the new Rick and Morty. Who, I'm going to give it away. Who wants it? And they're like, ah, we're good. Like, that's awesome. Like, the people, like, and that's the people I want to deal with. You know, I love Rick and Morty, and I love Rick and Morty fans. But it's like the people who get, I'm doing air quotes. Mm-hmm. I feel like the people who get what I do, which for the most part feels like the people who bother to read it, they get it. And they, like, those are the people I want to deal with, is the people who love 80s action, these niche things, you know, that appreciate a good story. Cause I feel like dialogue and story, I do really well. I think I do action better than a lot of people because I really lean into it. But yeah, it's like, you're always trying to build always. I thought Rick and Morty might give me a big bump. It hasn't, but I'd say each book it's gone up. Mars Attacks, it feels like no one read it. Which is too bad, cause I think it's tremendous. I think it's one of my three best books, probably.
It was really fun.
It's really fun. I wish Dynamite promoted things because it's really good. I don't remember the question. I got a little bit far away, but I think I answered it.
Yeah, I think you're talking about the new book, the Kickstarter. Now,
oh yeah, Old Head. It's real good. It's got punches and jokes in it and Draculas.
It sounds like it's got a lot of things in it. I mean, you named themes and characters and stuff. There was a lot of stuff going on there. Is that how your writing id works?
I think for my best books, like, it's always. It's like, take like Mars Attacks. Like, what's Mars Attacks about? It's about two guys trying to survive the Martian apocalypse. But to me, it's this reconciliation. It's really the heart. Like, that's the most important part. It's like, you know, we all have got dad stuff, or at least maybe you don't. Maybe just I do.
Oh, dude, I totally do.
Yeah, yeah. But I think even – and that's like just like two men. I think everyone has like that sort of parental relationship. And now I'm at the age where it's like I'm on the other side of coin. Mm-hmm. It used to be – it's like, oh, I'm always trying just to be me and my dad's a pain in the ass or whatever. And now it's like, oh, now I see why he's a pain in the ass. And I wanted to tell a certain story with a certain sort of emotional journey. But at the same time, I want to tell a really dumb, funny, punch 'em up story, which I did. Like, that's my thing. Sex Castle, which is like, what's Sex Castle? It's the best 80s action movie ever made. There's tons of dopey fights and weird characters, which Assassination is the same thing, right? It's a bunch of great characters doing big action scenes, and it's funny. But Sex Castle, to me, is, again, about like parental responsibilities and how our decisions affect our lives. Rock Candy Mountain's about what one man will do for what lengths someone would go to for their family, along with a bunch of other tiny little things that float in there. Those little things to me are what make a book interesting. But at the same time, my impetus is comics should be fun. I want a fun story, and if no one cares to even notice or really absorb these subtexts that I put in, like, great. That's great. Like, that's, if you did, you have fun, that's all that matters. But for me, it's like doing the fun, rompy parts, the easy part, doing the part that I care about, which is these little things that kind of go underneath, are way more interesting. And I think by having those things, I say this a lot, I think if you have subtext that has like a real meaning underneath a joke, the joke to the reader just feels like more. It feels like there's more to that joke than just a gag or, you know, a punchline. It feels like there's something really happening here with this funny bit.
So which of those comes first for you when you're coming up with something? Because what I found when reading a lot of your stuff, and I think that you're right. The first instinct is, as I look at, oh, it's a funny book. But I think the thing that makes it work, and the thing that makes it, for me, memorable, like, oh, I'm going to read more of this guy's stuff, is that it does have a truth underlying it, a drama, to, you know, like, so my favorite writer in comic books is Garth Ennis. And the thing that I like best about what he does is that, take Preacher, for example, you know, it's ridiculous. It's silly. It's violent. It's stupid. It's crass. But underneath it are these amazing characters and relationships and things that makes that all work together. Because funny on its own is fine, but it doesn't necessarily stick with you the same way. So my question, I guess, is like, how are you coming at it first? Like, what is the first thing you think of when you're doing that? Is, you know, are you doing those things on purpose?
It's the dumb idea first. Uh-huh. It's always the dumb idea first, but the dumb idea is literally, I want to do a basketball book, right? Mm-hmm. I want to do something with basketball on it. And originally I was going to do like a Will Chamberlain as a detective thing. It's always like trying to, like, I really want to do a basketball thing. How do I figure it out? The book I just pitched with Chris Schweitzer, I was like, oh, it's going to be this TV mystery. It'll be a TV mystery. Mm-hmm. And it's like, oh, we'll use a lot of fun characters. Like, I got a bunch of dumb character ideas. But it's like, well, now that exists and we have a story, but how do I make it interesting to me? And that's always the stuff. So like this upcoming book that's not been announced, which we've done very little on, it's like it's going to be a mystery with all these sort of these characters that used to work with the person who's murdered trying to solve it. And it's like, once again, it's like, well, what if we dealt with, you know, loneliness and the power of friendship, which is a trope I love. I love the power of friendship and parental issues, you know, all these sort of factors that made it's more interesting how these people got to where they are, right? And then how the story causes them to resolve it. And hopefully it does so in a way that's very, very funny until it's not. That's what I like. Mm-hmm. I like it's very, very funny until it's not. And then I can be funny again. But if I can get a couple good emotional payoffs mm-hmm. in my funny book, that's a real victory for me. Mm-hmm. And that's really the type of stuff that interests me. I could tangent real hard into My Hero Academia right now, which is something that's really popular right now that I feel does this very well, which is like, what is it? It's about the super high school. That's very basic and it sounds great. They all have powers, but through the course of it, they give everyone these quiet moments. It's about, you know, the power of friendship. It's about how what look like handicaps are not if you try hard. It's all these really interesting little things that I think it does really excellently. And I suspect, like, you know, Rick and Morty is like, what's it about? It's about this drunk asshole scientist that takes his grandson on adventures. Like, that's fine. But, you know, what's really interesting to me about Rick and Morty is this crazy family dynamic. That's what really interests me. And without this dynamic, I feel like you don't care about any of these characters. And then how it plays in each of their adventures is more interesting. I just think you have to have those weights to it. So it's like, I like a story. What do I want to do? And then how do I make it more than just X to Z? How do I throw in a bunch of letters in between X and Z besides just Y?
Are you a plotter planner? Like, or, you know, do you have everything pretty worked out before you go to script, or are you discovering things as you're writing the characters?
So for the books that I write and draw, which includes Sex Castle, Kill Them All, Rock Candy Mountain, and now Old Head, I didn't use a script at all.
Really?
I don't use a script. But what I do is I think about it a lot. I think about it for a long time while I'm doing other things. If I ride my bike, which I try to do a lot, I think about it. And I tell myself the story over and over and over and over and over in my head. And the parts that don't work for me, I'm like, well, I have to figure out this part. I figure out that part. Then I just sort of, I mean, I have like, how many pages do I want to do? And I know, like, if I, this is 126 pages, and say I knew 10 things that needed to happen over those 126 pages. So it gives me time to let things breathe. But I have an idea what I'm going to do coming in. That includes like flashbacks or all that stuff. So for me, it's like I feel like I've lived in the story and then I just bring it to life. And the reason why I do that is another life hack is that I hate to do the same thing twice. I just hate it. So if I wrote that script, if I wrote a script instead of drawing it, I would be done. I do a little outlining. And if it's like if it's a big monologue or an important dialogue sequence, I might workshop it a little bit. And it's not the best way to do it. Don't do it, kids. Don't do it this way. It's dumb. Because no joke, like sometimes I have to trash 5 pages that I completely drew and lettered, you know? But the strength for me is that I can change things. I can go back and change something to make the part better. And I get to make it feel very organic. And I think that's why they're very funny. Cause I'm laughing in the moment. And also the action sequences feel organic, which makes them more powerful as a storytelling element. So yeah, for me, don't do that though. Like no one else should do that. It's a bad way to do it, but it works for me cause I don't like to do things twice. And, I've literally thought about all of them so much, which is my normal thing. I don't workshop stuff out on paper. That's not fun for me. Uh-huh. I'd rather sit and stare at the wall, which I do. And it took my wife like a year to realize like I was working when I'm just sitting, there doing nothing. It's like, I'm actually working. It's just all very internal.
How do you not get distracted?
I know a lot of, I feel like it's such a sort of a douchebag thing to say. It's like, I really like telling stories. I feel like I'm a storyteller now in my 40s. Like I really love them. And you know, if I have, this is so dumb, but like, if I'm lonely today, I can think about my story. And like, that's a whole world I get to inhabit to make it do this thing I wanted to do, which is to affect people in a certain way. And I love that. I love breaking stories. I love figuring it out. I love finding that thing that makes a character who's fun, like then great. I think Buck Tarkington's a great example of that from Assassination. I had a really dumb name. I knew I was going to basically base it on my best friend Chris Schweitzer.
I could see that was him. I've hung out with Chris, but it's been like 10 years, so he's not my best friend. But I consider him. And I saw him. I was like, that's Chris. And I will tell you that, and I'm not kissing your ass, every time I read the word fuck Tarkington, I laughed a lot. And then, yeah. Two, I really loved the nature of his relationship with his friend whose name I don't remember. Yeah. They were just all about each other. And there wasn't really even subtext to it. It was just like, I support you. And I liked that.
People can add subtext to it if they want to. That's sure. Fine. I think in modern comics, like, that's my thing. It's like, you know, here's when I pitched, the pitch was soft, but I was like, it'd be a really funny character if his name was Fuck Tarkington. It'd be really funny. And it's funny to me. And it's still funny to me. It'll always be funny to me. It's funnier because Chris was like, oh man, why does his name have to be a cuss? but it's like, I love the idea of friendship as a meaningful factor.
Yeah.
And so like, it's something I want Pomona and Jackson to really have that. And it didn't quite land, which is my one concern about Rocky Mountain. But I think the power of friendship is a great thing. Never give up, power of friendship. Those are my favorite tropes. Amongst a bunch of other things, probably that are just like writing tropes. But I love those two things because I think they're real important to the existence that we have while we're on this planet. But that's why, yeah, fuck is great. What's fuck's thing? He's a big old sweet boy who's also a hitman. Well, that's funny. He's got a funny name and that's funny, but what if also like he's the best possible friend you could have, right? Like is a hitman. Like that's stuff I love. And you know, it's funny, like with Assassination, like it's not supposed to be the Dave and Fuck show, but you know, it's the Dave and Fuck show. And somehow that's how it goes. And we're all fine with it. Cause we love fucking Dave.
Yeah.
Which is a weird phrase, but
I just liked that there wasn't a twist. They were just friends and they supported each other. It mattered. And that theme of friendship. You know, I told you earlier, Garth Ennis is my favorite. Preacher's my favorite comic. Well, that's because Jesse and
Cassidy,
of course, are, yeah. You know, they're just it's good friends.
Yeah, it's real complicated, and they show it's hard to be friends.
Yes,
and that's it. You know, Preacher is I think is one of the great books of all time. Yeah. I really lean towards those sort of like 36, 50 page or 50 issue series a lot because I like beginning, middles, and ends. But that's a thing that definitely, especially like it's an escalating bonkersness. And like you can see the influence that Garth Ennis, especially with that book, has had on me.
Yeah.
Garth Ennis is a big influence, though not a direct one. But I just think in terms of like, here's somebody who was telling stories that no one else was telling, which is like, hey, what's your book about? Oh, it's about a preacher and his girlfriend and a vampire, and they're going to try to fight God. Like, fair enough. That sounds pretty stupid. It's like, yeah, my book's about the ex-toughest basketball player, you know, and he runs into Dracula, basically. It's like, well, that sounds pretty stupid, too. It's like, yeah, but trust us. Like, it'll be fun. It'll be great. And hopefully, like, you feel something at some point.
That's awesome. Let me talk about you. What were you doing when you were working in a factory? Where was this creative energy going? Was it there? Were you thinking of stories that were like, if you were lonely then, like,
yeah,
had that always been fulminating in the background?
I was working at newspapers before I worked at this printing factory, and newspapers are very much hurry up and wait. So it's a lot of sitting around. So it's like, well, I might as well draw and Google things, play on the internet. Mm-hmm. And so even at this printing job, this printing factory I worked at, like I bring my computer in and I had a tiny little, a Yinova graphic display, and I would work constantly. And I would just make sure, like, if anyone was walking by, I'd stop because they couldn't see there was like a little wall so they could see my head, but they couldn't see what I was doing. And it's like, I just work all the time. And it became like, I mean, it's the same now, is that if I'm not sleeping or eating or literally being tasked to do something, I'm just working all the time. Actually, I play phone games. I play like PUBG on my phone, like, too much. But other than that, it's like I work. And that's what happened, is that it became a real obsession. And it almost has to be to do it in comics.
Yeah.
That's our joke, but it's semi true. I did it before someone was paying me to do it, and I would do it again and still if someone wasn't paying me to do it, because it's the way I like telling stories. And I like telling stories because I think we all need, like, I think comedy should be fun. I think there should be more of it. And I'm trying to do that.
Did you, so you said you went to school to be a painter. Like, have you always been drawing and like, how did the sort of storytelling part of comics develop for you? Is that tough?
I'm not for sure about the storytelling part, but yeah, I was always drawing. I was always the drawing kid in class. I won a bunch of awards in high school and college and when I got to college, though, I took a year of playwriting, and I couldn't tell you why I did it. Now I won a contest for adults when I was just like a teen, for doing one act plays in Indiana. I won a bunch of writing awards too. It wasn't my priority. So I'm not sure why. I mean, I love literature and I love art. And at the time I was so far away from comics. So maybe I was just still really fixated on on good story, I guess. I can't tell because it's been so long. Like, I don't know why I took those classes. Mm-hmm. I don't know why I was like, oh, I should take these writing classes, except for I definitely didn't want to take math or phys ed. That's for sure. But then, yeah, I just didn't for a long time, man. I just drank at bars and played darts for a long time. But I worked in this store when I was a teenager this is a mouthful. It sold, it did used music, used videos, it rented videos. It was a comic store, a baseball card store, and it had like a little bit of a porn section in the back. But because of that, like, you could have free books. We could watch whatever movies we wanted to, and they had great classics. Like I said, I fell in love with the Marx Brothers. And so I just consumed so much pop culture. I've always been a big TV guy, maybe too much of a TV guy. Mm-hmm. And I think my thing is, like, if you consume things in a way that you're critical and looking for the things that you know are good, or at least make the story interesting to you, and become very critical about it, as you consume tons of pop culture and you reach, 36 years old, like, maybe if you can line all those pieces up, you can tell a pretty good story. I don't feel like now. I feel like I've just consumed so much pop culture, and my interest has always been the story more than anything else. That's what I've been interested in. I find out in my late 30s, like, what I'm really interested in is not music or movies or comic books, it's storytelling. Like, storytelling is what's really interesting to me. That's why a lot of the music I like is like that. It's always like song music. Those are always my favorites. I'm almost never like, man, what a good lick. I'm always like, man, what a good bit, right? Mm-hmm. What a good bit. I love a good bit. I think that's it. It's like, I don't know how it happened. People are like, ooh, how do you do this thing where you're funny? I was like, I don't know. Like, that's the thing that I do. Yeah. I don't know how someone can write Spider-Man for 30 issues. I guess I would try, but it's like, I don't know how you could do a character that nothing ever happens to in a way that interests other people. Like, that's really amazing to me. so we all have our abilities, right? We all have our strengths.
So
mine was Secret. Who knew?
Yeah. I'm glad you found it. I bet you're glad you found it.
You know what? Like, my life's so different and so unexpected. And I think, and Old Head sort of leans into this. I think when I was 13, it's like, oh man, movies are so cool. I could make a movie and be famous one day. When I'm 13, a little kid, you're a little kid, right? You're like, oh, when I could do that. But you don't, right? Like, it never, like, it doesn't happen. And that's a lot, I think, what Old Head's about. As I look at it now, is like, because, you know, Sex Castle got optioned, Kill Them All got optioned. It's like, I went from being just a normal guy, in my opinion, to being someone who, like, sort of wild and unbelievable things happen. And it's like, well, I would have predicted that when I was little. But if you would have said something when I was 16, like, you never would have believed, you know what I mean? Like, oh, when you're older, you're going to make comics for a living. 16-year-old me, who loved, like, Youngblood, you know?
Yeah.
Little dummy reading Youngblood or whatever. It would have been like, man, shut up. Like, that's not real. And I think that's a lot of Old Head. It's like, man, what is your destiny, and what is your family legacy play into that, and what legacy do you leave into that? Which I think about now, but I think when I was writing it, I had different sort of things in mind for the story I was trying to tell. But I think that's a lot of it. It's like, man, it's like people who won the lottery probably always thought they'd win the lottery, but not really, right?
Right.
Like, you just buy the ticket, but then you win it, and you're like, oh, well, I always knew that was going to happen.
And that's how you look at it? That you won the lottery?
I definitely did. Uh-huh. Because, you know what, I don't have to lift anything heavy anymore. I don't have to do what anybody tells me. And, like, you know, all work is work. And that's the thing, is like, I've had people say, well, boy, aren't you, like, what a miracle life is. Like, man, I'm stressed all the time.
Sure, yeah,
like, no, I'm totally stressed and bad. The things, it's funny because each level, like, if I think of comic, like, success as levels, you know, and like, Brian K. Vaughan is at the very top. He's not worried about anything. He's only made masterpieces. Everybody loves him. Everything he does makes a ton of money. He's not worried about it. It's great. He's not worried about it. He's not worried about anything.
He doesn't have Frank to be. It doesn't mean he isn't.
He's not worried about anything. I bet he takes it real serious.
Yeah.
But I have a feeling that Brian K. Vaughan's the type of guy who's like, all right, I've worked this out. I've used my system. It's perfect. And then, you know, Fiona's like, hey, what if I drew a big old dragon dick in the next issue? And he's like, oh, yeah, fine. We'll draw a dragon dick. Put a dragon dick in there. Me, that's like impossible. Someone's like, can we draw a dragon? I'm like, you know what? I've thought a lot about this, and there's not really a space for dragon dick. But then I go, well, maybe. It's like, then I'm stressing about it. It's like, oh, I should have just been like, yes, draw the dragon dick. And I didn't do it. Frank Avon's not worried about it. But it's like each, so like, you know, when you start, you're like, man, I hope people read my book. And then you get, oh, people, like, each tier, you think, I'm going to get rid of that thing that frustrates me. And you do. Like, oh man, I can't wait till people bring me to shows, right? I don't have to figure out how to pay. Uh-huh. And spend, it's like, but then it's like all new stresses you never knew could have happened. So it's like each level of success. So it's like, it's still awful. It's still hateful work as much as anything else, but it's great. It's great hateful work. And I think that's probably the payoff.
So
a pitcher's arm, like, twists, you know, yeah. It's the same thing. It's like, you get to play a game for a living, but you're still fucking your back up and just stressed all the time.
So what's the unexpected comic book stress that you could share at the level you have recently reached?
I don't know if I could do it without
business stuff.
It's business. It's 100% business stuff. It's dealing with publishers and, like, things being handled the way they should be. It's like, the farther up you get, the curtain gets pulled more and more on comics, and you're like, right. Oh wait, like, this isn't just like an amazing, incredible thing that happens. Like maybe you get to work on that property. This is not speaking for myself, but like, maybe you get to work on a property that you always wanted to, but then you find out, well, that company is really concerned about how things are represented. So it's like, you don't get to tell the exact story you want to. In fact, they have all these notes for you. Like, that sucks. That sucks.
Yeah.
Or like, how, if you want to sell a book, a great book that you love, and the publisher won't charge you less than half the cost of the book, it's like, well, you never make any money unless you don't sell. You only sell the book once, right? Things like that, like, you never considered, because I'm like, oh, I'm gonna self-publish and then I'll have the books. But it's like, oh, well, it's $8 a book. It's like, oh, that means I make $4 a book. That's terrible. How do I get that to a show that I'm not driving to, I'm being flown to, and I can only take 50 pounds worth of stuff? It's always something. And then the next tier is like, well, then the next tier is now they will bring your stuff out. You don't have to worry about your stuff. You get there and your table set up. It'll be great. And I'm sure it's something else. Like they're taking 30% or who knows, right? I'm just saying every tier there's something worse. Like whoever that's why whoever who's the most famous celebrity like right this minute? The Rock?
That's a good. That's probably right up there.
Yeah, like, look, the Rock's a great looking guy. He's getting to do all these movies people like. He's really charming and affable. Though he has to be that way all the time. Yeah. Which has to be a little exhausting. But like probably that dude can't go to the grocery store. Like he can't leave his house at all, right?
Definitely.
Because yeah, it's like that. Well, that sucks. That's terrible. And because of that, he's really lonely. There's all these things. Like it's always work.
He's just sick of eating chicken breast and salmon.
Yeah. Well, yeah, he's eating the same thing. I'm sure it's great because he sees the world, but do you think he sees the world like I do, which is from a trailer? I don't know. Who cares? I mean, I love making comics. It's the best fucking thing. People are like, oh, you should write Hollywood. It's like, I don't know how to do that. I really love this very specific form of storytelling. Not that I wouldn't give it a shot at this point in my career because it's a lot of money. But it's like, this is what I like to do. This is what I like to do. And when I do these things like this Kickstarter, there's no editors telling me whatever, like this character should be more likable or this character should be less likable or you should shorten, you know, it's just like, oh, what if you put Mickey Mouse in there? Wouldn't that be better if Mickey Mouse was in there? I'm like, maybe, I don't know. What if you put Frankenstein in your old head book? Like, I don't know. Stop it. So I get to tell the stories exactly like they're unfiltered, which I love. Which is the best way, because I didn't do that for years. I've been writing monthlies, and monthlies have their own problem because you have to have 20 pages worth of story and then stop. I don't love that. It's rough because it's like that. Because I think cinematically, I don't think episodically. When I think of my story, they have beginning, middles, and ends. And if you do it episodically, each episode, each issue, right, also has to have a beginning, middle, and end. So it's another problem altogether, which I like. I do like the challenge of it, and I do like how you have to, the floppies have to sell the trade. That's how it works in America, comics, unfortunately. But I like making books the best, and I like drawing books, and I get to do it when I do these things. So,
how did you adjust to sort of just drawing your own stuff and then having to do scripts, and then immediately you're doing scripts for a licensed property? So
that must with the licensing, it's pretty easy because when I started, they had an animator doing who couldn't do graphic storytelling, really. So I was doing full layouts. I was doing full scripts and full layouts.
Oh, wow.
So for Rick and Morty, when I started, I would basically draw out the book and then I would just make a script off of it so they could reference it. Mm-hmm. But I've also, like, I've worked with artist-wise, Mark Ellerby who took over, he was backup artist, he took over to be the main series artist, I think, on 26. He's amazing. Like, I barely give him any. The thing is, Mark Ellerby, Erica Henderson, Christian Weitzer, these guys are master. They're master storytellers. They're master comic creators. I don't have to do anything. I can say very, very little in a description. And they know what I mean. And generally, they do it better because they're better artists than I am. So I feel like my thing with scripts is that they're a little more wooden than I feel like when I do my own stuff. But also, I would never, like in, I wish I had, oh, I do have it right in front of me. Rock Candy Mountain number one. There's a page that has a fight sequence on it that's like 26 panels or something like that. Where you at, buddy? 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12, 13, 14, 15, 16 panels. I would never, ever, ever ask anyone else to do a 16-panel page unless there was a very good reason for it. So I think that also, like, for script writing, you ask a little bit less because you know how much work goes into it. I'm trying to do that less with my writing because if it's supposed to be there and it's better, then they can figure out how to make it work. Mm-hmm. But I've been very lucky for script writing is that I've mostly written for people who are very much professionals.
That's cool. So
it's not as much fun though. It's not as much fun.
Is it?
Drawing's
yeah.
Very fun. When I spent a year not drawing anything when I did Mars Attacks and Rick and Morty and Assassination. And then at the end of that, it's like, man, I really hated I didn't draw anything. It's like, well, I'm gonna start drawing, but boy, it's gonna be so much work because I haven't drawn in a year. But it's like once I start doing it, that's because I'm not doing a script. I'm just telling the story right there, right? It's all coming to life for me the first time, for my hard work, and I love it so much. And that's the thing. All the way back when I was having my kid, that's the feeling I get. It's this weird, a weird art high I get from creating, from drawing and writing. I need to do more like for these, when I'm doing just scripts, I think I need to do more like outlining pages. Like I still do the stories, but still sort of draw it out. Cause I think like when I do scripted stuff or stuff I draw, there's more sort of physical bits in my stuff than there is in those, because I'm like, oh, I should add a panel where like this happens, right? Mm-hmm. Where he drops something or whatever it is, whatever bit it is. I'm worried that middle part's gonna be real depressing for him. There's gonna be a bit where like, what's this guy? This guy doesn't seem super happy. I'm real happy. I'm great. Just so everybody knows.
So what's been the way that I keep asking you stuff and I'm like, oh, how's this go? No, that's fun too. That's good. So what was hard about this?
About what's that? About making comics?
Making comics. What was a hard thing about comics? Like what was a challenge that, what was a part that, you know,
in my career or?
Well, I'm saying, because it sounds to me like you started making this thing. Some people noticed it.
Yeah.
It goes up from there. You know, was there a bit where you're like, maybe I'm not going to make it. Maybe this is that, you know, like.
Well, I think every single time I, you know, we have, what are they, what is it? They, it's a imposter syndrome, right? Uh-huh. Have you heard of imposter syndrome?
I've talked to a lot of comics people and I've tried to make comics myself. I know imposter syndrome.
I don't think that I per se have imposter syndrome because since I'm making these things, it's a selfish way to make, I'm making the thing that I would like. And I think, well, if I like it, other people will like it also. Mm-hmm. And I do that. And like, you take it into account, like you kind of want it to be broad, like for example, like, look, I could do 120 issue Kyle Starks basketball manga. And I could go just deep. I could do the, what's the Ed Piskor thing? The grand design, NBA grand design. Oh. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
I could do some dumb stuff that I know people just in general would not like, or maybe it'd be weirdly popular. Who knows? But I do consider it a little bit. It's like, I want to tell stories. My idea of what a good story is very, it's still a very action movie. Like it's acceptable to everybody. But because I'm always making this thing to sort of entertain myself or to put something out there that I feel like deserves to be there, I don't really have imposter syndrome, but because I've always worked multiple jobs and I've worked in a union for so long, I do always think, well, I hope this one sells. That's everything I've done. Mm-hmm. Oh, I hope people buy this one because I'd like to do it again. And my wife hasn't had to work for a year, so the last or 2 years maybe, like we've been doing pretty good. But
wow,
like we had Rick and Morty, I'm doing 26 shows a year, I'm doing 26 conventions a year.
Jesus.
I'd like to do less of that.
I did 8 1 year and I'm still not over it.
I did 36.
Wow.
2 years. I did 36 appearances. But I make a lot of money. Rick and Morty is very popular. Mm-hmm. And you write that while you can. My thing is, I always think people are like, oh, what's your plan in 5 years? And people always have like, oh man, 5 years, I'll be drawing Daredevil or whatever. Mm-hmm. 5 years, I'll have a movie property. It's always something that's like, man, for me in my head, 5 years, I hope I'm still doing this. I hope I'm still doing this in 5 years. And 5 years from now, you say, "What if I somehow make Scott Pilgrim in the next 5 years, it's like, man, I hope I get to do this in 5 years. It will never stop. And that's, I really like doing it. But I think that's the stress is that, what's the page rate going to be? Can I sell a bunch of, my thing is I always want people to read the thing and it's never quite high enough. Mm-hmm. Outside of that, like what's been hard, collaboration is really hard. Since I came in and I drew basically my first three books, mm-hmm. I wrote and drew. I'm very type A with story. Chris will tell you, Chris, who's my best friend, who I consider my peer in every way, who I think a couple other stuff. He's like, specifically Mars Attacks. He's like, I had a bunch of ideas, but I thought, well, he's good at this and I'm good at telling stories in a different way and it'll be great. And it's like, I really appreciate that. And that's part of why probably what Chris and I get along is like, I've thought about this one thing a lot. I've made this story and you will bring it to life. And since I'm also a cartoonist, like if you wanted to dance with it a little bit, I get that. Like I get the dance, but it's like, I got my story. So unless you have a very good suggestion, don't, which is why editing is tough. Uh-huh. I've been very lucky with my editors that I've had as a professional at Oni and everywhere. I've been very lucky, though there are always hiccups, but collaborating is very hard for me. I'm a very People will be like, I know him and he's the loudest fucking dude. But it's like, I'm a very insular, I'm very happy being alone. Mm-hmm. And I'm very happy sort of like, you know, playing with a stick in the dirt for my own amusement. So collaboration is really hard. Editorial is really hard for sure. But I say like the most anxious thing, like even right now, it's like, I'm trying to raise money for this book that I want to put in this world, this great book. It's like, man, will it get to 20? I think it's my 13. I'm at almost 14 right now.
14. I think you're at 14. Yeah. I was just looking.
And it's like, well, I have 20, basically 20 days left, but I'm so, it's constant. It's like, because the thing is, I want my kids to have shoes. I would gladly go back. That's not true. I was raised as like I said, worker. I'd be glad to go back and work again. I hope that never happens because I would like to just tell stories for a living. That's what I want to do. I think I'm good at it. Mm-hmm. I think I'm good at it, and eventually I'll do something that everybody sees and cares about, hopefully. I think it's everything I've done. And then they'll go back and they'll be like, oh my God, he's been making good stuff for so long. I should have read Sex Castle in 2016. You should have. It's great. It's so good.
I don't disagree. So what, I mean, this is sort of related, but like what's your goal in, like, what do you want to do? Like, you know, in terms of making comics.
I just want to keep telling these weird stories that are unique and singular, but also are universal. I don't know. With Rick and Morty, Rick and Morty is ending at issue 60 for me and for Mark Kellerby. We've decided the series is ending and we can move on. We've been like the bad like store manager who thinks the place will fall apart without him, you know?
Yeah.
That's been me. That's been me on Rick and Morty for a long time. It's like, oh, without me, but it's like, it'll be fine. I don't matter. It's like, you know, I'd like to have another monthly gig, and you know, I'm going to do Skybound and hopefully an Image book next year, and mm-hmm. maybe more of those things. But it's like, you do think, it's like, well, you know, I would like to do Superhero X for, you know, a year, and see how that goes. So I don't think in my head, I go, oh man, you know, my dream job would be to write Captain America, when it's right. absolutely not to write Captain America. There's probably a point where it's like, oh man, there's things that I would do, but there are the things, of course, that no one wants to publish, or actually they're not things that people would buy. I love the Great Lakes Avengers. I love the Great Lakes Avengers. I did a D-Man thing for Secret Wars 2. I love D-Man. That's a character. He's like my other things. He's like, oh, what is D-Man? He's like this guy. He's more than just a big, like, sort of D-list guy. He has all these other complicated things that Gruenwald gave to him that I really like. And the Great Lakes Avengers sort of accidentally are the same because I'm a Midwestern guy, and I feel like the Midwest is always sort of anything that's not, you know, three cities basically in America is shat upon, unless you live in Texas and then you ignore everything else. And second, so that type of thing interests me. But I mean, I think that stuff's inevitable, and I look forward to doing it, and I think it'll be very good for my career. But you know, I think I want to tell these stories, and I would like to have one do well enough that I can tell whatever story I want to. Mm-hmm. Where people will just – it's just like this book. It's like, just trust me. Can you guys trust me? I'm doing something good. I'd like to reach a point where I can say that and 100,000 people agree. You're like, we got to check it out. He's got a new thing. That's what Brian K. Vaughan's doing. Like, that's why I talked. I'm fixated on Brian K. Vaughan. It's like he does whatever he wants to, and they're unique and they're singular, and people – and they're well done and better well done than mine. That's why it's Brian K. Vaughan. He's very, very good. But like, that's why he can do whatever – that's why he can do this weird space opera, or he can do a thing about – kids traveling through dimensions on bicycles, are, you know, Canadians water fight, which is like bonkers. Like,
no one remembers that book. That was a weird book. You know, it was fun.
I thought, I was like, this one's going to be the one. What's it called? We Stand Together.
Yeah, I don't even remember, but yeah,
We Stand Something.
No, it's the Canadian, right? With Steve, what's his name? The guy who did all the Matrix art. He was really big in the 90s. Anyway.
That's the one I was like, this one is going to be, We Stand on Guard.
Yes.
I was like, this is going to be the Brian K. Vaughan book. That's not good. It's finally going to be the one that he really laid a stinker. And it's like, no, this thing's great. It's so good.
Yeah.
They're all good. He has not done a bad thing yet. Good for him.
It's true.
That's a very rare thing to do creative. I'd like that. I don't feel like I've done a bad thing yet so far. Knock on wood.
Maybe a couple of Rick and Morty issues. That's just horrifying. Hey, can I ask you, I think we'll wrap up pretty soon, but can I, you know, Rock Candy Mountain was the first thing that I sort of came across of yours, and it was really unique. Like, where did that come from? Like, where did that start as an idea for you? Yeah.
So Rocky Mountain, here's how I just did my 80s action movie, I did my 90s action movie, mm-hmm. and I realized that there's an entire world of action movies I had not really seen. Mm-hmm. And I was like, I'm gonna start watching sort of Japanese kung fu theater, which is now all of Asia. It's entirely Asia, right? And I started watching. You know, I'm gonna blank on names, so I'm never gonna try. I watched a bunch of what they call wushu films, and wushu is a type of action film that's sort of what I took away from it. It's different, I think, than if you go to a Wikipedia page, which is. It says it really leans to heroism, which I think still applies. But anyway, wushu movies to me were, as I took it, Crouching Tiger is sort of one, the most recognizable modern one. It's always someone's going from point A to point B. They have this journey where they fight all the way. And there's like magic stuff happens, but it's barely any magic stuff. And when it happens, nobody cares. For example, maybe you fight on top of trees. Mm-hmm. Nobody cares. Why did it happen? I don't know. There's a little bit of magic in the world. And so I was really interested in what would be the American version of this sort of, there's a bunch, because I say it's like if you watch a Bollywood film, it's like they don't feel like they're not Shakespeare, they don't come from Shakespeare in some way or another, right? Like they've like, what is the story? Like this is a, they're telling the story different, and I feel that's true of a lot of these sort of kung fu films, though not as much. Like you still get the basic sort of, you know, the sequence of telling stories. Anyway, so I was like, what would be the most American way to do the story? And I was like, oh, it's Hobos. Like Hobos had the best going point A to point B. They had a great destiny. I wasn't even thinking about the song Big Rock came out at the time too, which is it had to be some sort of subconscious, because it was like, oh, where is he going? Where's this guy going? Because at the time it didn't matter. I just wanted to have this sort of journey fight. And I was like, oh, he's got to be finding Big Rock Candy Mountain, which is softly magical, which is, you know, heaven for hobos, heaven for sinners, really, in the book. And I was like, who would be the best bad guy? It's going to be the devil. Like, you can't beat the devil as a bad guy. So that's it. I was really interested, and I still am. Assassination is very much, to me, influenced by the modern Korean action films. They're very stylistic, and there's always a lot of people, and there's always a lot of cool characters that sort of interacting. So yeah, a bit like wushu films. I wanted to make a wushu American wushu film. I love that. Oh, and I started reading a lot by hobos. I think at the time I actually was researching hobos because I was thinking about genres. Like there's the ninja and there's pirates and there's cowboys. I was like, oh, there should be a hobo genre. So I think I was researching it because of that, and they all sort of came together at the same time. And I found what I learned about, you know, I'm doing air quotes, hobos in America is so different than what you think it is, which is not just a bindle and can of beans. They were these really fascinating, it's a really fascinating subculture that was mostly like ex-vets who were coming back with PTSD, who just wanted to sort of live the life they wanted to live. It's like these guys were heroes and they were out there just working and sort of getting shit upon because they were doing what they wanted to. But there's a real sort of freedom. And I really became fascinated with just the culture and the history and how misperceived it was. So I fell in love with hobos, which only makes it better because it's not just, I don't want to just tell this fighting hobo kung fu movie. Now it's like, oh, well, I want to show the appropriate respect, which I did. That whole culture was so fascinating. And of course I forgot about it because I had to watch all those Korean action movies and replace it. And I have to do nonstop NBA basketball stats in my head because I'm a psychopath. But yeah, that's what came about because I was watching a bunch of kung fu action movies and I thought, what would be the American version of this type of story? I would do that again. I really I'm so backed up in just terms of business, but I'd like to. I'm really interested in non-American story structures mm-hmm. that I think still work in America and how you figure that out. So I hope we get to do that again. I hope I find another. I'm sure there's thousands right now. Someone's screaming. It's like, oh, what about? It's like, yeah, I'm sure there's thousands, but it's like, I'm dumb and I'm from Indiana and I'm doing the best I can.
So it started like as a format, like this type of story. Cause it's funny. Cause I, you know, like many people like me, I'm like a history nerd in a way. And so I saw, I've never seen a comic book about hobos. And so it seemed like it was, you know, starting from the idea of, I want to tell a story about the Depression or whatever, but that's really interesting that approach sort of came from the opposite direction.
Yeah, all that post-World War, like I remember Schweitzer, because Schweitzer's a big history guy.
Yeah.
And he's like, you got to set it in the Great Depression. And I'm like, no, man, like World War II is very important to the story. It's super important. So it has to be post-World War II. And he's like, that's not the golden era, though it kind of was, to be honest with you. Mm-hmm. The Great Depression was like, that's a lot of people traveling because they had to. Like, it was sad. And post-World War II is really when I feel like there's a lot of people making a lifestyle choice. It was always making, but you know what I'm saying. I think It was very intentional. Like, I think a lot of those bets were like, this is like man, coming back from Afghanistan, hey, can you go back groceries for 8 hours? It's like, no, these guys are like, fuck it, let's go on a train and go dig some ditches. And then when that's done, we'll go pick apples and like, we'll figure it out. But we get to live life the way that we want to. It is wrought with danger, which like just crew, because it's the, you know, no, there was no regulations. Like, no one cared about people dying on train tracks in 1945. Mm-hmm. Like, it just did. Like, who cares? Like, oh, another hobo's dead. Throw him in the box. All that stuff's really interesting because it's like, this is a time you could have existed on Earth in America where just existing was dangerous. And to me, it's like, well, what if you gave these people agency where they were just kung fu fighting constantly, you know? And that's really interesting to me. I love Rock Candy Mountain. That's a really good book. I wish I would have done just one volume instead of two volumes. That's something I've learned. I've learned because it was going to be 8 issues all along. I knew it. Mm-hmm. It's going to be 8 issues unless issue 4 sold 250,000 copies. And it's like, oh, I could stretch it out for 16. You know, I could add some hobo stuff in there to stretch it out. But I had a beginning, middle, and end. Like I said earlier, I should have just made one volume. And I think people would still be talking about that book if I did that. I think it'd be really popular still. Sex Castle sells nonstop. Like, not really? A lot. It's constantly selling because people are constantly loaning it to people. Mm-hmm. And it's just one book. And here's just one story for you to, that's why I think that's why YA books do so well. Cause it's like, look, here's one book. And you're like, it's really good. I loved it. Oh, you should read this. And then you loan it to your friend, but then you're like, man, I still wish I had my copy. So you buy it again. And then your friend's like, oh, what's this? You're like, oh, you should read it. The people who read Sex Castle are really good about that. And if Rock Candy Mountain was one volume, I think I'm certain it would have been the same because I think it's such a good story. But I think the majority of people who bought it just got volume one, which is half a story. It ends in a weird, like, who knows what's happening next? I don't know. It's like right after the prison break. So it's a weird halfway point. It should have been one book, maybe one day. I want to do a hardcover really bad.
Do you think that's in general or do you, I mean, because you said you really like those 50, 60 issue sort of stories and arcs. Like, is it just for that specific story?
I think for eight issues, it should be one book. I think Murder Falcon just did that. That's a great example. That's a book. That's a guy. Daniel Warren Johnson is so good. But that story, clear beginning, middle, end. It's a hindsight. If I would have known then what I know now, I would have been like, let's just wait and do one book. And they asked me, it was like, they also like, this is how we do it. And I said, fine. I don't know any better. It's literally my second book, really. Yeah. You know, that's it. Every time you learn something new and you hope that you learn the actual correct response for the next time it happens. That's why Assassination's 5 issues. I think in 5 issues now. I think 120 pages. I think in 120 page stories, I think that's the sweet spot.
So you're not doing more Assassination?
We had never planned on doing more Assassination. Right. They put that volume one on there. There's a one on the side, which seems kind of cruel, but we're open to it. I mean, I could do it because I love fucking Dave. Like, if we did it, it would be a lot of fucking Dave. but you know, the only reason why we did those 5 issues. Is because Erica was quitting Squirrel Girl and she was going on to do a 3-book deal that she had lined up, which is not there now. But at the time, it's like, well, we have 6 months. You want to do something for 6 months? She asked me. I'm like, absolutely. Like, let's do this stupid thing. It's called Buck Tarkington in it. She's like, let's do it. It's like, she's moved on. Erica's, you know, I think if there's enough people and enough interest, if they make something, you know, if there's some sort of secondary market thing, if they make a movie or a TV show or who knows what they would do at Sky, who knows? I don't know what they'd do. I think probably then it'd be like Kingsman 2 type deal, right? We'd be right back on it. Oh, these guys, we love these guys.
I think that's utterly fair. So, boy, I think we covered a lot of ground. Is there anything else that sort of come up? I guess the Kickstarter is the thing that's the only thing you can talk about right now.
Kickstarter is my main thing right now, yeah, because I love it. And I think everyone's going to love it if they give it a chance. You guys have spread the word so well on all my work. I get literally told all the time that people heard about me from you guys. So I'm stoked to be here.
That's awesome. And I love
you. I know at least you guys will like it. You guys will like Old Head for sure.
I'm not worried about that.
Yeah, and the thing is we're supposed to be a publisher lined up, but there's not. So like, this could be it. This could be all that exists. You never know. Hopefully not. But I really like Kickstarter, and I really like then people to buy stuff in stores. So hopefully I can find somebody. But back to that Kickstarter, Old Head by me, Kyle Starks. You can get a button with Dracula button stuff. It's good. It's real good.
That's awesome. Well, thanks so much for spending time with me and chatting.
Oh, yeah, that was great. I hope I didn't sound too sad sack or curmudgeonly.
I didn't. That's not what I got out of this at all. I thought, here's a peppy dude who likes the work he's doing.
Yeah, that's right. That's what I wanted. But it's like, it is hard. I think like the work part is really, imagine.
Work is work.
Yeah, like that's why Kurt Cobain was never happy, you know? you think once you get everything you want, which hasn't happened to me yet, I'd like a bunch of money. Because my wife wants it real bad. Like, I'm pretty happy, but if I had a lot of money in a nice house, but then he's like, well, there's some new problem. Then you have to worry about like someone's making shirts in China with your design all over it, and they're making millions, or who knows? There's always something. I don't want to seem like complaining because I love comics and I love all the people in comics and the people who buy them. I love them best. They're my favorites.
They're good people for that reason. That's
cool. I love it.
Thank you.
Thank you.
In the big rock candy mountain, the houses are built of blocks and the little streams of sody pop.
And that is all for my conversation with Kyle. I want to thank him for talking to me and spending time. He's got a job, he's got kids, he's got all the stuff that he needs to be doing, but he's hanging out with us. And he's also told me that folks have come up to him and said that they've heard about his books on iFanboy, and I think that is super cool. Get over to iFanboy.com. You can comment on the show. You can see other interviews that we've done over time. You can see all the stuff that is there. Patreon.com/iFanboy. Thanks to everybody who donated to make this show possible, and thanks for that. And that is all. I'll talk to you later. Thanks very much.
Hard-boiled eggs. There's chocolate pie in all the trees and jam in all the lakes. Oh, I'm gonna go where the wind don't blow. There's a big free show and candy snow in the Big Rock Candy Mountains. So come with me and you're gonna see the Big Rock Candy Mountains.
This episode is brought to you by BetterHelp. How's your social battery doing right now? I've never used that phrase, but I instantly know what it means. And I think it's interesting because it works two different ways. Some people need to have their social battery charged, and they this is the introvert extrovert thing. And some people, you know, like they've got enough energy for other people, but then it's time to sort of step away. And, you know, as we get to this part where winter is ending, which again, it's opposite. I love winter. I don't need it to end. You know, you start getting together with more people and it can be a little draining on top of every other thing that we all have going on in our lives. I just assume everybody's overburdened because I think everybody's overburdened, but it can be tough to deal with. And also one of the things is like, you can't necessarily understand why you feel that way or why it's making you tired, but it's a real thing. If you think that you could use some help with it, if you could figure out a way to make things better, therapy is a great way to help. It can give you that kind of self-awareness to know how to ride that level just right so that you feel good, you feel right. If you're thinking of starting therapy, you can give BetterHelp a try. It is entirely online. It is designed to be convenient, flexible, and suited to your schedule, which is, again, we've been talking about being busy, right? You got to fit that in. You got a lunch period. You can do it during that time, whichever. That's possible. You fill out a brief questionnaire and get matched with a licensed therapist. You can switch therapists at any time for no additional charge. I like that. There is no penalty for finding the person who is right for you. Find your social sweet spot with BetterHelp. Visit BetterHelp.com/iFanboy today. Get 10% off of your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.com/iFanboy.